What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either, really.
Go.
No. Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode. And also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here.
Hello, this is Scratch That, and we have Emma Parker with us. I'm very excited because I'm going to tell our little origin story to introduce you.
Yes, please.
So last year, my book, Feel Something, Make Something, was coming out, and Emma reached out to me, this stranger on the internet, and was like, I would love to document your book release, all things around it for you. And I was like, is this the psycho serial killer fan person, or is this just a really cool human? And it was a little terrifying, but we met for wine at Sippy, and I was like, wow, this person does not seem psychotic at all.
Good.
So far, so good. And then you just showed up to everything that I was doing, workshops, shows, release day, and you came in as this witness container holder. Just your presence there with me documenting it gave a weight to the book coming out and all these events. Like, those things would have been special on their own, but having you there and just like your presence and the way that you witnessing you witness someone else's joy is maybe the ultimate joy.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So yeah, that is how we got to know each other, in kind of like one of the most intimate but detached, like we had very specific roles, but it was so intimate, and you were watching me like fall apart as I put the show up and be like, I don't know what I'm doing.
I was witnessing an artist. Yeah, be all of it.
It was so beautiful and magical, and we just haven't stopped since.
No. And what's so funny is when you share that story, it makes me sound like very outgoing and extroverted. I am not.
I was going to ask you, are you doing this kind of thing all the time?
No. There's this thing, and I'm going to sound so like woo-woo right off the bat, but that's fine. I have this thing about me where I have like, it feels like a deep intuition and knowing if I'm going to connect with people. And my best friend Ruby had gifted me Caitlin's first book, and it has meant so much to me and other people in my life. And so when Caitlin shared that they were releasing this next book, I was like, yeah, I have to just at least offer, because I just feel so connected to everything they've shared online. And then they're just as magical in person. But
I know, isn't that crazy? You're real.
So funny to hear that you're worried I was going to be like potentially a serial killer, which I also would feel the exact same way, because I showed up to Sippy like so nervous, because I just really, really love other creatives, you know? And so it's like meeting this person you admire and who creates art that is so vulnerable and like juicy and true. It was just like pure joy. So I love our origin story. I'm so grateful. And I love where we are today. It's great. It's just evolved into something bigger and better all the time.
Yeah, it's so good. And the reason that we have you here today specifically, beyond just that I fucking adore you.
We're going to get to all the things, but like when I saw the photos of you in the bathtub with your partner doing the vow exchange, I was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Oh my gosh. Thank
you. I was like, who is this person? Because I what you wrote in that post was just about like, because you photograph weddings all the time and engagement photos and stuff. And you were saying something like, you should do your wedding exactly how you like, what feels good to you, and think about it that way. And I had like, that's what I had wanted to do for my wedding too, but I didn't even go anywhere near the territory of being in the bathtub. Like you're just like, no, the horizons are literally limitless. Like, how do you feel close to this person? How do you want to celebrate this? And so I was like, this is amazing. I want to be near this human more. So
I am working on receiving such kindness and I'm just like ready to melt. Thank you both so much.
Well, the reason that we really wanted to talk to you in this context, in the container of Scratch That, is that you have actually been experiencing an immense amount of suffering. We were talking about infertility and miscarriage, which are two things that I have never experienced, but a lot of people around me have. And I felt just like really honored that you were sharing things with me and that I could be in that space with you. And I just want this to be a conversation that's easier for us all to have. Rebecca and I were talking before we got on and we were both feeling nervous because we're like, we don't have a lot of scripts for how to talk about this. And the ones that we do have are pretty shitty. Yeah. And I just want more conversation about it.
Yes. I just to like raise my hand to that, Emma, as I was like falling in love with you on with my internet stalking and trying to think about what questions we could ask that would be meaningful and like actually like open up conversations that you want to have. Everything I was writing, I was like, oh no, I feel like I'm falling into like a triggering trope that like you hear this language or this kind of question all the time. And like, that's got to be wrong, but I don't know exactly why. I don't know. I also don't know a lot, but it also is something that feels like I feel like it's a lot more common than a lot of people think, maybe in part because we don't talk about it as openly as often. And so we just really are grateful that you're willing to come into this space and help us understand and be near you in it. So thank you.
Yeah. And first and foremost, I just want to say to both of you and to anybody having the conversation with somebody dealing with infertility, of course, your intentions are so good. And like, that's something I think all the time. Even when somebody says, there's maybe a few times where somebody said something and I thought, oh, that's just you being hateful. Like, it's very, very rare. Even in moments that I'm like, ooh, that did not feel great to me, I can acknowledge the intention is never, ever to be any kind of way triggering or harmful. So I just want you both, I'm saying the permission here is that we all three can come to this conversation, however, and know that I know your intentions are not to harm me. And so in having a vulnerable conversation, I've been reflecting on this a lot. We have to talk about things that aren't going to feel comfortable. And that's totally okay. Thank you for the space. And know that there's never going to be a moment where I'm like, wow, I can't believe you asked that. Like, I understand where you're coming from. And I'm grateful that this conversation might help even, you know, two people in the world have a conversation that's less sticky. So it's all good. It's all wonderful.
On that note, though, I would love, as we're talking, if you feel comfortable doing it, if either of us say something that does feel icky, to be like, this feels icky and why? Because I think that is, there's not a lot of spaces where that feels, do you know what I'm saying? So someone listening could understand, like, let our fumbling ease someone else's.
So long as you know that it's all love. Yeah, it's all love.
Yes.
Yeah, and to me, the most loving thing is that someone would let me know if I've caused harm or just like that something feels like, oh,
yes, yes. Even something really tiny, even just like these three words, if you could reframe them or whatever. And I think that is a generous gift because there's inevitably like, I know for me, I don't love doing that for other people. So I know what you're saying about like your intentions are good. And I feel that for people with disability, oftentimes people say, I'm very aware of the scripts people have around disability and the clunky things that come out of people's mouths. And I also know that people's intentions are good. And also it still feels shitty.
And also it's awful. Yeah. And also like one thing my partner and I were just talking about last night, because, you know, I spoke with him and I said, is there anything that you are not comfortable with me sharing about our shared experience? And he of course was like, no, do it. But we were talking about the question, you know, scripts around people that have infertility. And one of them that's been especially prevalent for me is people not feeling comfortable sharing their pregnancies with me. And so then, you know, there's been more than one time where I found out after the baby was born. And in those experiences, you know, the people that have made that choice, I am not at all upset at them. It's your pregnancy. Of course, you have comforts and discomforts. But there is a feeling that when people know about your infertility, it becomes this like open wound that you wear. And so people make choices for you and treat you more as if you are this infertility versus the person you are, which, to be completely honest, I'm not proud to say. Of course, I feel jealousy and envy and anger for myself, but I'm more than happy for any being who like wants to have a baby to have it. Amazing. Like, great for you. That's a miracle. To be left out of it because people know that I'm struggling feels like maybe that's all I am to them. And you kind of, I mean, my husband and I, it'll be 2 years of trying. In July of 2022, I was in my bathroom yanking out the IUD.
I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know you could take it out yourself.
Like, I researched it and it's totally safe. I will say I cried. It took me 45 minutes and some frustration, but it doesn't hurt at all. Came right out.
Wow.
I have to cope with humor.
You were ready. You were ready.
Yes, I was. So like, you like get off birth control. You're so told like it's going to be so, so easy. And then it's not easy. And then it's hard to find people who want to truly be in that space with you without making that all you are. And so beyond the way you feel about yourself, which is a totally different thing, is the way you feel that people are behaving and feeling, like sharing their own feelings or coming across with their own, like they're working out what you are, you know, like how to react to you. So that's something that I feel like comes up a lot. And that's not even something people say, you know, that's just the way people move around you. And we can feel that difference. And again, totally understandable. Like, of course, I can understand being pregnant and being like, this person has been through so much. And I would feel guilty. Like, they're working through how they feel about this. And I can understand being like, I don't have the space to go there. Like, that's really hard and sad. I know it's really hard and sad. I'm in it. And so I am cognizant of like, not every person can meet you at the depths of your total despair. And that should be okay. But it does like echo and grow the feelings you have about yourself and around what that means about you.
One thing that I am really struck by, you said something like people are making choices for you. And I think that's really interesting that like that would be the reaction, almost like, and that goes back to maybe some of that intention of like people thinking that they're protecting you, but actually shifting that framework to saying like, I'm not going to let you choose for yourself how to navigate this or respond to this. And also the way that you described the layers of feelings that you are able to hold at the same time. You are able to feel joy for this miracle and joy for this family, and also anger and envy, and that you are able to hold all of that at the same time. I wonder if, in part because that capacity does seem so rare, I wonder if that's part of what you're encountering with people around you, is that like, that's too hard. So it's better to just protect you, choose for you.
I'm so guilty of this too. And it's something I'm like working on, is thinking that you know better for other people than they know for themselves. And not like even letting them be a part of that conversation, which is not fair. And again, I do it too. But like, in terms of people like not wanting to touch the conversation, my most recent miscarriage was this February. And I had been pregnant for 7.5 or 8 weeks. And you know, we had a whole month of thinking we're going to have this baby. And we were both very apprehensive because, just for context, we started trying. I had one for sure chemical pregnancy. I believe a second one immediately after, but never got a positive for that, but it was every other thing was like textbook chemical pregnancy. And then this most recent one. So chemical pregnancy is, just for those who may not know, is like if the sperm and the egg meet, they go into the uterus and they don't stick. So that's a chemical. It happens, the embryo grows, but it doesn't implant. So that's a chemical, versus a miscarriage is that embryo's in there and either it's, you know, it's not going to work, it's going to like come out. So I had this miscarriage, and I had somebody share, luckily they didn't say this directly to me, but this is just a perfect example of minimizing for comfort. I had somebody say like, well, maybe Emma had a chemical pregnancy, and if she knew that, she'd feel better. And it's like, no, I'm not going to, it's, that doesn't, I think there's this, we want it to be digestible. We want it to be, oh, well, yeah, this happened, but it's over. And it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that long, but 2 years, I've watched friends have second babies in the time I've been trying to have one. And when you've waited that length of time and any one of those babies shows up, to lose that is devastating. Like, these are, and the people that have said this, you know, are people that have like had really great luck getting pregnant quickly, have not had complications. And it's like, if you, I think a lot of times people want to say things to put a bomb on it or to get you to be like, oh, it's really not that bad. Where my husband and I were just saying this, what feels better than like, hey, I'm so sorry that happened to you, is, you know, when the rare person will say like, I can't imagine how painful that is, and I'm so sorry, and I'm here for you if you want to share ever. That feels better than, well, maybe it was just a chemical, or at least you know you can get pregnant, or, you know, things of that nature, where it's like, yes, I know that I can get pregnant. I also have only known loss. I also know now when I get pregnant, I'm probably going to miscarriage. That's what I've learned. So it's like when you want to share and then people immediately want to like stuff it down to something so much smaller than what it is, it's earth shattering. Like, it's changed the person I am. Like, I remember the first time that my partner was trying to get me out of the house post miscarriage. And we were driving around and I was just angry, crying. Like, I can't believe the world is just like out here moving on. And I mean, today is August 30th. I'm still stuck in February. Like, that's something that I think people don't understand all the time. And I have a close friend who just the other day, she and I were talking, and she's also trying to conceive. Great for her. I'm so excited. And she was saying, you know, when you lose a child that was born, or when you lose a person in your life, people deeply care about how you're doing and how you're feeling. I'm losing something I've never seen. I've lost something that I had never had the chance to announce to anybody. And so you're in this isolated grief that feels massive. And then you do open up and people don't want to go there or like understand that. And then you go back into that isolation chamber of like, wow, this has changed me as a person. And the people that I'm closest to don't even understand the depths of that. So how could they understand me? I've like just watched videos of people sharing. That has been such an anchor when I can't always connect to people in person. Like, you know, family members saying, when are you going to have this baby? Well, I would have a baby. I would be due in 3 weeks from today. I would have two babies almost. And when people have literally said to me, like, you need to stop thinking about it so much. Like, you need to stop fixating on it. That's not how it works. Like, wouldn't that be so wonderful if I could just be like, you're so right. Let me just like wipe the trauma 3 times over that I've experienced and act like it doesn't matter. Like, I can't do that. That doesn't feel honest. And we need to do a better job at making space for those people in that grief, because it is like earth shattering to the person. Mm-hmm.
Can I don't even know if this is a useful question, but I find myself really curious listening to you talk, and I'm trying to piece together like what this aversion is or this reaction that people tend to have that you've experienced. And I'm wondering, on the one hand, it seems like what I hear you describing and what makes sense to me is that we don't have scripts or narratives in the world to understand this unique suffering. Like people seem to be dismissive of it. Like if you would just stop dwelling on it and move on, like it seems like there's a large misunderstanding of how deep this grief is. And on the other hand, a lot of what sounds true to me and what I hear in your stories is like this deep human aversion to suffering at all. And like this, I almost picture in some of the comments that you've gotten people who can't sit in suffering themselves and just want to be out of it as quick as possible. And it reminds me a lot of times of how we talk to children, or how I hear people talking to children is like,
yes. Like stop crying and things like that. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Or like, you're fine. You're fine. You're okay. Or like, I'm going to distract you so that you can't feel the pain of that. Like there's something so deeply human in that. And so I'm just wondering if it's both of those things at the same time, or what you see from where you are.
I absolutely think yes. And like, that's a big part of when we first started chatting, and I was like, it's so okay to like stub your toe on a comment. Like it's so okay. Because it is so human. Like that person who said those things, like stop dwelling around it. If I boil it down really, really, really to basics, that's a person who's saying, you're hurting, I want you to stop. And I understand that. I understand that. Or you're hurting and I don't want to touch it, or I don't want to deal with it. Or if I were you, I would do it different. But it's like exactly what you're saying. I'm not a parent to any earthside children, but I have a goddaughter and I have lived with her. I have a nephew. Like I'm around a lot of parents, and it is the exact same. It's like what feels big to me versus what feels big to this child versus what feels big to your partner, et cetera, et cetera. We don't get to decide what that is, and how we show up to that person should be compassionate and graceful, even if we don't feel the same way. It doesn't have to be like, I saw a video of, it was highlighting grandparents basically sharing one child is really upset that the other child had the cup she wanted. And so the grandpa takes her to look at other cups. He offers her a solution. She's still crying. None of these cups are the cups she wants. And the whole time the grandpa's like, I'm so sorry. I know that's so disappointing. Like I can tell you're so disappointed. And like, of course to us, we're like, oh, a cup, whatever. I'm 30. I pick out my coffee mug every morning. And I mean, how many of us grew up being told we're too much, too loud, like stop being dramatic, XYZ. Like there's a lot of reparenting that I think occurs for a lot of us. But it's an inability to let somebody have their experience and honor that. Just this week, I've had two people text me out of the blue, like not within prior conversation. Like this is the first conversation of the day. Asking me if I've heard about XYZ for fertility treatments. Have you heard that this might be the cause of infertility? Like, have you looked into this hormone? And it's like, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Well, because that in the world of disability, I feel like that is a common thing as well. And to me, and I want to know if this is the same for you in infertility. To me, that feels like, do you not think that I am in charge of this and have done all that? Like, I'm researching. I know all the things a little bit better than you, and I know my body better than you. Okay.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Across the board. It's like, you know, I've been poked and prodded a million ways. I've had ultrasounds before I was ever looking at a baby. I'm on fertility medication. I'm on herbal support. Like I've done so many things and had so many things tested. I've literally had somebody left to this human, but that is not trying to conceive, has never tried to conceive, ever, message me and say, I know somebody who went through IVF, so feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions.
Why would I do that?
You know, and it's like when you're, and again, I understand this person is like, I love you, whatever I know I want to offer you. But it's like, you're not just talking about like, oh, I'm repainting my kitchen and here's a color that totally suits you that my friend used. This is the brand. She loves it. You're not talking about that. You're reaching out cold. This is like a cold audience. And you're trying to say, hey, I've never done this before, but if you want to talk about the invasive IVF procedure and all the things that come across with it, I'd love to answer any questions. You can totally pick my brain.
Well, the implication to me is that you're just sort of like bumbling around out here. Like, I don't know what, I haven't looked into anything and I just can't, it won't work. Like.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm not even trying. And for some reason, it's like in Bridgerton when they think that kissing is having sex. It's like, I'm just smooching my husband and I don't know why I'm not getting pregnant. And so it is, it's that exact feeling. And it's like moments like that where I'm like, ooh, like, let me not be resentful, but I'm just like, read the room. Read it.
The thing that I've just been sitting here thinking about is that the work of all of us is to like sit in our darkness and pain, because all of this is coming from, like, I feel like the underlying piece of everything we're talking about is that we don't want to be uncomfortable. We don't want to experience discomfort. And I don't want to experience it by witnessing you experience it, and I don't want you to experience it. And that is the thing that I have been learning. That's like one of the top things I'm unlearning right now as like taking care of a tiny human, where it's like when he's freaking out about going to the doctor and I don't want him to freak out and I want it to be fine. I want to tell him all the reasons it's fine. That instead, when we're like walking up the steps and he's going, I'm scared, I'm afraid, I'm scared, and I'm afraid, I'm not saying it's okay, it's fine. I'm saying, I will hold your hand. It's okay to be scary. This is really big. And that's like such a tiny little example. But I think the like work here for anyone who's like, how do we do this? Is like, are you sitting with your own discomfort? Are you sitting with your own pain? Like, what are you refusing to experience within yourself?
How, Emma, like listening to you talk both about the suffering and like your ability to stay present with it, how did you become this person? I feel like your ability to hold on to more than one feeling at a time, you're constantly extending empathy to all the people around you, even as you're feeling your own suffering. And then you're like staying present and articulating and paying attention to the unique layers and textures of your grief. How did you learn those skills?
Yeah, I appreciate that very much. Thank you for saying that. Through suffering. And I mean, truly. So I'm 30 now. When I was 24, I left an almost 10-year relationship and a marriage. And in that window, I dated somebody who was completely not right for me. It was a very toxic relationship. And I was physically and mentally the most ill I've ever been. I was like medicated for like multiple panic attacks a week. I was really not well. And in that deep despair and in coming out of it, I found yoga. I found mindfulness. And I, for additional context, during this window, like my bosses, I got pulled into a meeting once where they were like, people think you're so mean. And if you don't get nicer, we're not going to be able to let you work here. Like, because I was so sad that my energy was just like gross.
That is not what you are now. So that's very striking.
Yeah. And like, that's why when people come to me and are like, you know, I feel like complete shit. I hate everything, blah, blah, blah. I'm never going to feel better. I'm like, you can. You really can. And I've always said that suffering. So that was my first big, you know, dark night of the soul as an adult. And then 2 years of infertility just dug me deeper. And I will say, between, you know, getting divorced, I met my partner and I have not had panic attacks since. I'm just like, completely blissed out in a safe space. Thank goodness that I have the husband that I do while living this experience, because it would have been totally different had it not been Adam Lee Parker and if it were anybody else. But I do think that the more pain we feel gives way to the more joy that we feel if we're willing to be with it. Like, so much of my childhood, I remember starting therapy in my early 20s and not being able to name my emotions because I had grown up in a military family. You know, there's always some sort of stress. Like, my dad was deployed a ton. It was not spoken, but there's like this expectation of you have to be tough and you have to deal with it. Like, I'm grateful for that now because I really do have that attitude in life. But I grew up with a mom. I always say, like, my mother, I was raised by this woman who, instead of letting me wallow, would say, like, hey, get back up and we're going to do it again. And as an adult, I had to come back around and say, like, but what are you feeling? And it's okay that you are. And so going
interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
Through such pain allowed me to then say, like, well, if I have this depth, I have that peak too. I can live differently and I can carry myself differently and I don't have to feel like this. There is a part of it that I do believe is a choice of perspective. We can victimize ourselves forever, or we can say, like, yeah, all of this is so true and so painful. And what meaning can I give myself? What meaning can I give pressing on? You know, like, there were so many times during that period of getting divorced where I remember not caring at all about what happened to me, about the outcome of my life, because I was like, there's no point. I've been in that place where I did not care about myself at all. And then to see other people in that space, like, one of my very, very cherished friends, Katie, has this sign in her home that says, we're all just walking each other home. And I really feel like all of that suffering, I was surrounded by so many loving people who took such good care of me when I wasn't of myself. And during my miscarriage, I was sharing this with Caitlin. My best friend Ruby sent me a miscarriage package. And it was all of the things that I could possibly need to make it through this time, because I didn't want anybody around me. I wanted to be alone. But even in that darkness, there are people who love you and who are extending that hand. And you can be that person for others. And most importantly, you can become that person for yourself. And I think a lot of people miss that step where it's like when I was triggered a few weeks ago, I had a week where I rotted on the couch because I was so sad. And I, like, it had to do with infertility. And I remember, like, again, this is, I'm very hesitant to share anything that I think would hurt somebody else. But this was a friend who had a baby and did not even share with me that she was pregnant. And when I found out, I was just, like, crushed. Like, I just felt like I would have loved to have been there for you. And I wish I could have been. And I'm sad to think that people are viewing me as only infertility and not as Emma. Like, I'm not being seen as myself. People are now seeing me as this thing. And, you know, she did. Sweet angel. She did reach out and she was like, I should have said something. And I would have never in a million years been like, you should have told me, or I'm hurt that you didn't. Never in a million years. Because again, your pregnancy, your choice. I'm so happy for you. Thank goodness you're both healthy. But I, like, stood in the kitchen after she had sent me this text and it brought that feeling right back up where it's like, I can't escape infertility in any area, even in my friendships. And I, like, sat in the kitchen and I started shaking. My body reacted immediately. And I just, like, held myself. And I was like, you're totally okay. Like, it's okay. And I think so many of us don't learn that. So many of us don't want to look at suffering in ourselves and others. And we miss the opportunity to befriend ourselves in a way that is so magical. And so thank goodness for mid-20s Emma, who went through so much, because now I'm able to experience this without it, like, just making me a rageful bitch, which that gremlin does live in me. And sometimes she pops out. But, like, suffering sucks and it makes way to deeper understanding of others and ourselves. And it is goodness.
Okay, so I think it's so much in scripts. We talk about scripts and the podcast. It's like in the name, like scripts. And I feel like we're piecing together some of the scripts that are painful, right? Like minimizing and distancing and erasing and ignoring and like the intolerance of the pain. It sounds like as I'm piecing together some of the scripts that you would revise or rewrite, it's things like the more pain we feel and are able to sit with, the more joy that can come, or yes, this is painful and we can press on. Are there like other things that you, if we actually had a script here, like a script that we could have around infertility and miscarriage, what are the things that you would put into that script? What would you want there?
One thing I see a lot, and like I have one really close friend who also is going through infertility and IVF. I'm not at IVF yet, but she is doing all that jazz and she's had good success with it. She's like felt more hope than she has in a while, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing. But one of the most important conversations I feel like we have had after my most recent miscarriage, you know, she had shared with me, I don't want to get like, if I get pregnant again, like I'm so angry, like I am not going to enjoy it. Like almost punishing herself with spite and anger and taking away from what could be, because she's like, I had this experience and I will not enjoy it again. And what I told her is that during my miscarriage and even before, there was this little part of me that always felt like it wasn't going to work out. Of course, you know, you want to have hope, but there was always just this little part of me that was like, something tells me it's not going to work long term. But this little baby is so, so, so wanted. I want this baby so much. So does my husband. We love this baby. We're so freaking thrilled for even the opportunity. And while this little being is in my body for however long it is, it deserves to feel my excitement. It doesn't deserve for me to be sitting here going, well, yeah, maybe it will happen again. And this sucks. This sucks. This sucks. Which if those feelings came up, that's great. And I would honor them and I would sit with them. And I did. But also, you have to be willing to, like, that little being deserves more energetic bliss than just me being like, everything is doom and gloom. Like, that's not how I want this baby to feel, however long I have. And so I would say when it comes to people having miscarriages, there's also this feeling of like, I can't go on. I will never make it through this. You will. You can. You will. We don't get a choice, and so we have to, but you can. And the other side is not all grief. Yes, it's a lot of grief. I told my husband and another close friend of mine, it feels like my body is past capacity and stuffed full of grief, sorrow, absolute despair, like this freaking void that's just sucking up everything. And in between the crevices of all of those negative emotions, our joy, our gratitude, our all of the other things, they can still be there. And if you, like, you're not broken, you're not hopeless, your life is not meaningful only one way or the other. I have really close cousins who are my parents' age, so they're a couple decades older. I love them so much, and they were never able to have kids. And I saw them this past summer and they said to me, at least you know if it doesn't work out that you can still live a really happy life and you have an example in us because we did. And I know that she struggled. I know that she wanted that baby so much and she never got to have that experience. Is there space for me to be more than this? And is there space for me to imagine a future that might look completely different? And can I work on acceptance in that, even if it's not the way I want it to look? Like, I think there's just so much of this, like, don't talk about it. It's never going to get better. It's always going to happen this way. And it's like, can you make space for nuance and change? And can you make space for good feelings amongst all of the bad ones? It's not that simple. Of course, it's not that simple. But I think that we need, when someone comes to you and says, like, this is the experience I'm having, and I don't know if I'll ever see sun again, like, the sun is not in my life anymore, you can say, well, damn, I'll sit with you in the nighttime until it's day, but the sun will rise again. And we are like, I was not the only person who grieved my loss. My husband wasn't. My family grieved my loss. His family grieved my loss. My close friends grieved my loss. Can we create more space for people experiencing miscarriage that is, I'll sit in this with you. And we don't have to even say anything, but you're not alone. And I know this shit sucks. It's not the end of anything. And perhaps it's the beginning of like greater understanding of yourself and others. And when I do have my baby, because I still have hope, I will know, like, who could know the freaking miracle and joy and overwhelm of getting to that step when you've wanted it and cared so much about it. I know we're going to be great parents. We want that baby. We want to cherish whoever that little being becomes in whatever fashion, however they present themselves. Like, we want that being. And let me not get bitter in the process. Let this crack me open so that I serve that baby even more when the time comes.
There's so much about what you're describing that is both very specific to your experience, to infertility, to miscarriage, and also feels like very deeply human to the experience of suffering and pain. And the way you talk about expectation and imagined future. And I think when I think about suffering, I think that piece of it is like also a big part of pain, is like what I expect and imagine into my future. And how do you remain open-handed, like holding on to hope while also holding on to like, this might be different than I imagine, and that will also be okay. It's just so much to hold on to.
Such is the human experience.
If you sit with it, yes.
It is unique to miscarriage and it's universal. Like, I completely agree with that. Like, me getting divorced has helped me in miscarriage. And one of the things I definitely felt in the first year of trying is when you start trying, you imagine like, oh, this holiday, I'm going to share with my family that I'm pregnant. Like, what really just made me tear up a little bit was remembering my parents saying like, oh, we're going to have two babies this year at Christmas. I don't have a baby. You know, it's like, and that's the second time I've felt that gap in this process. And so there's this part of you that's like, oh, this is their due date. Oh, this is like when we'll have their first holiday. When you first start trying with intentionality, like tracking and such, there's this part of you that's like already calculating due dates, thinking, oh my gosh, it could happen. And I'm going to have a baby this day. Like, there's so much that goes into imagining that and imagining that life that you have like hoped for. And a lot of us, you know, from childhood, we think we're going to be parents, and you have that. It doesn't happen. You like feel that disappointment like again and again and again and again. And it's not something that I think is like certainly not linear, which of course nothing is, because there are definitely days where I'm like, I have hope and I'm okay. And then there are other days where I'm like, I just want to feel better. I just want to not feel this way anymore. So it's not all great, but it is a lot of like making space for whatever I'm evolving into in the experience. And the other part of that is like, and I'm sure other people struggling with infertility have probably thought this, but how long and how far do you go in trying? And what version of you is at the end of that? Like, how much are you losing? How much, like, what version of you makes it to the end if you push so long, so hard, and it doesn't happen? And so back to your question about like looking at a future that looks different. It's a lot of checking in with like, can I go on? Can I do this again? Can I stomach this disappointment, this pain, like this soul crushing anxiety and devastation? Like, the answer right now is, yeah, I can keep doing it, which again, to people with infertility, you can feel better and you will feel hopeful enough to press on in a lot of cases. But also I'm in this constant conversation with myself, like, when do I hit that wall and when is enough enough? Instead of splintering myself into a million tiny shards of like disappointment.
I was thinking a lot about Andrea Gibson and Mary Oliver as you're talking about this like duality, the like capacity for like the peaks and the lows. That's one thing that I was thinking about. And then the follow up to that was like, who are your teachers? Who is parenting you? Like, what is nurturing and tending and teaching you in this time? And also the other thing that it just feels like the complete, the through line for this whole conversation is this like dancing between this like middle way of tension of like, we're not glossing over, we're not like spiritual bypassing the pain. And also we're like holding on to hope and we're like, this pain has given me capacity for joy, but we're not saying like, oh, well, it's good that you experience bad things because then you'll be good. And so I am feeling this like tension. We're like really walking between these two things.
And it's like a suspended tension. It's just like the hanging. Yeah.
You saying that brings me to something I've heard myself say so many times, which is like, and I think I said this to Caitlin when we were at Sippy, is when you're in infertility and it's been going on so long, you know, the statistic or the phrase people use is that healthy couples can conceive in a year. I've done it twice. So I'm about to start my third year and it's like 3 years. Ugh. But you want to share these feelings, but there is no outcome. And I can't share the depths of my pain. I have a really hard time organically doing that, like getting super vulnerable when I can't tell you that, like, this is why it was okay. I can't do that. And nobody on the journey can do that. We can't say, you know, at the end of this, it's going to be worth it because I have my baby. I have no clue if I'm ever going to get my baby.
Or if you do, when?
Yes, exactly. I could be 10 years older from now. There's so many factors that you have no control over. And that for me personally, and I'm sure so many people, that freaks me out. I hate not having control, which makes me think of another thing that I think is a common script that should not be, is I can't tell you how many times people have asked me like if I've thought about adopting. And let me just say, amazing if you adopt your kids. Like, I think that's wonderful. And I know there are kids who deserve families, but I don't think it's fair to put that on people struggling with infertility to adopt those kids, because my desire is my child and other people can share that they want a kid and you're not telling them that they should go adopt instead of trying. That never feels good to me. I get the sentiment, of course, and I don't take it personally, but it always stings. It's like, okay, I don't need you to tell me you don't believe I can do it. And so maybe I should just give up and try adopting. Like, maybe I will one day, but that's my choice. And unless the person you're talking to says that that's the route that they would like to go, it should never be told to them that maybe they should do this instead. If anything, like if you want to support somebody in infertility, you can literally say, how can I best support you?
That's what we were going to ask you. Caitlin is already in your orbit, but now I want to be in your orbit too. And so how can we support you? And what are the things that feel nourishing and healing and healthy and good to you in this journey?
I love that question. I think it does vary person to person. But for me, like my friend Ruby sending out that miscarriage basket. She had it delivered to my house and the woman who delivered it had also dealt with child loss. And it was just like this full circle moment of like all of these people just like heart to heart, like serving each other.
Is that like an actual, like, was that something that she put together herself? Or are there like things that you can go and buy?
She did it. Yeah. And I think she Instacarted it or something to that effect, ordered it online. And I think she put in the notes like, my friend is having a miscarriage. Any other thing you think could be helpful, throw it in there. And so it was so, so, so sweet. Some examples of things that were in there were like Tylenol, saltines, Vaseline, because pregnancy will really do a number on my freaking skin. Okay. I was having like rashes and stuff. It was terrible. I was so itchy for like the first 3 weeks. And then I had 1 week of just like chilling. And then it was over.
Why is it so itchy? Why?
My first pregnancy symptom has always been my nipples itch, like from the inside in a place where I will never reach them. And so I'm just like, oh, yeah, it's terrible. She sent like this huge bag of chocolate. And there was like adult diapers, I guess, for lack of a better word, for me to just wear. Because it was, you know, I don't know if you guys want to talk about the experience of what a miscarriage is like, but TLDR, without like being triggering to anybody else that might be listening, when you have a miscarriage or when you're told it's happening, like if in my case, I knew and then I had it confirmed and then my body started its process. But when you're having a miscarriage, the first thing after they tell you is you have to decide in what way you're going to pass this pregnancy. And it's the same choices as having an abortion, which, quick sidebar to any human being that has had to make that choice, like my heart goes to them too, because it's not like a, oh, took care of this problem. It is terrifying and it is painful and it is not some like, oh, I'm going to go to the clinic. Like, I hate that rhetoric because it's not at all like that. And those people who made that choice also deserve support and care because it is hard. Back to what I was saying. So you choose from the same three things. You either naturally miscarry, you take a medication that you either put in your cheek or in your vagina and it dissolves and it triggers a miscarriage, or you can have a DNC, which is basically where they will open up your uterus and take everything out. So, you know, you get hit with the news, then you're told immediately, like, of these three options, what would you like to do? And when I was there, I was completely like, I knew, but I was like, I completely dissociated in the sense of like, I wasn't crying. And I was just like, can I come back later and decide? Like, I can't do that right now. And I went home and I immediately started smoking some weed because I was like, one thing I'm going to do is massage my brain if I'm dealing with loss. I did not smoke my whole pregnancy and I am a regular user. So like that really had helped my mental health. And I like my husband prepared it for me. Like I smoked just a little bit and I sat there and I was like, I have to like make another really devastating choice. Like I'm actually not done. Like the emotional damage of being told you lost your baby is step one. It is not the last step. And so I'm sitting there like just on and off crying, saying like, it is so messed up. Like it's so much harder than, I mean, I knew it, but I having not lived that version of a miscarriage, it was just like, I don't want to do any of those things. So then you're researching, you know, what's the best option? They all sound so scary. This is where stories from other people come in and are so healing. I ended up passing naturally, very gratefully so. Caitlin and I even had plans that I had scheduled a DNC just in case the next day. And I was like, you know what? We were going to have a really good time. And I was going to tell, I didn't say this, but I was thinking like, I was going to tell you I was pregnant. We were going to have so much fun, but tomorrow I might have to have a DNC. So like what I ended up texting was like, hey, I'm so sorry to like have to cancel. Like, I don't want to do that, but I'm really not feeling well. Like, and that's what I told people. I'm just not feeling well. So then like, it's not instantaneous. It's multiple days. Luckily, I guess, because it wasn't my first one. It wasn't as painful as I had experienced in the past, but my first chemical pregnancy and my second were easily the most painful experiences of my life. It does feel like labor. You do contract. You literally have the rise, you have the wave, and you contract until you pass. And so like each time, you know, you're in that experience. Unfortunately, my husband has never been home when it's happened. He's always been at work. It's always worked out that way. And he had even taken days off, like, to be with me. But you're just like I threw up from the pain. I was like puking and bleeding and like contracting. And it's like that pain barely touches the way you feel. Like the way your heart feels is the worst of it. And so you have this week for me, you know, finding out, having to choose, living through it. And then after that, it's just like, oh, well, like that was that. And for me, you're still stuck there. You're still in that space. And so Ruby has always been like, Ruby, my friend who sent that package.
We love Ruby. Ruby's a good one.
We literally love and adore Ruby. When I was in my 20s going through my divorce, I had issues with like eating and stuff when I got really stressed. And Ruby was my friend who could care for me. Like Ruby is one of my teachers because, you know, I'm going through something so hard with this miscarriage. She's like, I'm going to love you the way I know you want. And that's from afar. And I'm here anytime you need to talk or you want to feel about it. Like she has never been anything but a space holder for me and let me feel whatever those feelings were. But she's also never, ever, ever pressured me to talk about it. She's never pressured me or pushed me into a conversation by, you know, starting it out, by bringing it up, or like she's never done any of those things to me. And whenever I was in my mid 20s, like one of her very first beautiful examples, and this was before she became a mother.
I was going to ask you if she was a mom. Okay. Okay.
Yes, she is. So she has a 4-year-old who is like human sunshine. And whenever, like before she had her baby, she had baby me, who was going through the worst period. And I would struggle with food. Like I had other friends that would get really stressed or like bring me groceries. And it was like very stressful. I was always like, okay, I'm really overwhelmed. Ruby would like put snacks around. She would not say a word to me. She would like create the environment for me to feel safe, to do whatever healing I needed to do. And I know that that is so vague. Offer the person whatever space they need to do the healing they need to do. But that is the best advice I can give, because the way that I respond to it is not going to be the same as the person you love most. Maybe not the same as you, if you've had one, you know, it's, but the people around you, if you can say like, I'm here for you explicitly, and I want you to know that this isn't little to me. I know that this doesn't go away tomorrow. I know that you are really hurting and I see you and I want you to know you're not alone in it. And I'm here for whatever part that you want to have me in. That's what I would say to someone going through it.
I love the line, this is not little to me. Not that you have to literally say those words, but that idea of like, this isn't little to me, but then also just letting that be and like creating the space. It goes back to that thing from the beginning of like not choosing for you, not choosing for you to have to talk about this when you don't want to, but laying the groundwork that this isn't little to me and I'm here. And then I'm going to create an ecosystem where you can feel and talk when you want.
Exactly. Because it's not about somebody coming to you and saying, I know you're struggling with infertility. Do you want to talk about it right now? It's not that. It doesn't even have to be said, but it is that in this relationship, you are safe to feel whatever that is, whatever that looks like. And I think that's really important with like, it does start with us being okay with our own feelings, being okay with our own depth, and then saying whatever part of it, like that only extends to a million other things. Like infertility is a part of me. It is not everything.
I mean, like you and Ruby, it sounds like you had this long friendship well before this time in your life. And so in some ways, it's sort of like learning just how to be in deep friendship with each other so that when something like this happens or other things like this happen, that we already have created that safeness with each other and that I'm not going to shrink from your suffering, even if it's prolonged, and I'm not going to try to fix it because I can't fix it.
And neither can I. Like none of us can. And it's, I mean, it is a problem to be solved, right? But it's not like a problem to be solved in your community.
Yeah, in this way. Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like so many things. This whole conversation has been so rich and you've like helped us dive into some really deep corners that feels really needed. How do we even wrap up this?
I think there's a cute little fact I can share.
Oh, okay. A cute little fact.
I know. Yeah. And it's cute to me. It's cute to me, but it's also helped with my grieving so much. And it's that no matter how long your pregnancy was, even chemical, no matter how long your pregnancy was, there has been research to prove that those cells live in your body for like the next, I think it's 27 or 30 years. And so I always think to myself, they're still here. Like they're here. Yeah. I'm never really apart from them, even if I'm not holding them. And like they do exist, like in your heart, in your mind, in your being, like you're not without your baby, even if it's not the way you wanted it to look. And it matters. That baby matters.
Thank you for that.
That was beautiful.
This has just felt like the most generous offering.
It feels mutual. I feel like I've not got to share it like this. And I'm so thankful for this space. And I'm so thankful for what you guys are doing. And I'm just grateful for the conversation. If it helps even one person, I feel like we really did it. You know,
I think it already did. I will raise my hand and say just like being in this conversation with you was very good for my spirit. This podcast is edited and perfected by Amelia of Softer Sounds.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.